he wrote about a friend of his who back in the States, and he was just talking about the power of music. And he said his friend's dad was in assisted living, had dementia, had no idea who he was or who his wife was or who his son's wife was, you know, and or the grandkids. And so they would go every once in a while to visit, and he just dreaded going to it because it's like, I don't know who this person is anymore, and this person doesn't know any of us. And they were, you know, sitting around trying to connect and trying to communicate, nothing would happen, and everybody went to the cafeteria. He told Nick, I was just so angry and so broken, and I just went to the back wall and was kind of pounding on it. And he starts singing a hymn. And all of a sudden he hears this voice sing with him, and he sings again, and the voice sings some more, and he turns around and his dad is singing. He starts singing with him, and his dad starts singing right with him. And he ran out and got everybody in the cafeteria, and they sat around this bed, and he said for 2 hours, my dad didn't know who we were, but he sang every word of these songs, and we got to worship together. So when you were sharing, you know, that story, that just made me think about that and just the gift that music is that God has given to us to connect and to encourage and to have memories.
Welcome to episode 132 of the NRT Now podcast. I'm your host, Jake. And if this is your first time with us or your 100th time with us, we're just so glad that you're here. And if you haven't already, make sure that you are following, subscribe, whatever that looks like on your favorite podcast platform so that you know when new episodes come out. So our guest for this episode is Todd Smith of the band Sela. And it was just so awesome to hear some of the history from an awesome 25-year career, and they're still just absolutely going strong. And this conversation went everywhere. We had some awesome laughs. It got a little deep and I got choked up a little bit telling some stories. And man, there's even a Brad Paisley story in here of all things. So I'm just really excited for you to hear this conversation. It was a blast. So with that, here we go. Here's my conversation with Todd Smith. So we're here with Todd Smith of Sela. Todd, I said that right, right?
You said it right. It's Sela.
So it comes from an old, the old Hebrew or old Greek for, it means Hebrew. Rest, or like a period of rest, mainly in music, if I'm understanding that right.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's, they don't know exactly what it means. It's kind of one of those Hebrew words where we don't know, you know, do you say, how do you pronounce Yahweh? You know, that kind of thing. And so with Sela, there's like 40 possible connotations. It could be a musical pause, to pause and reflect. Stop and think about it, lift the voices in praise. And so maybe what if you look in the Psalms, you'll see it. It's to the right by itself quite a bit. And the assumption is that David probably wanted people to just pause and think about what they had just said, the prayers they had just said, and just kind of reflect.
Which I find a little bit ironic for you guys, because you guys have been doing like everything but rest this year. I mean, there's like 3 albums, there's single, like it seems like rest is like the last thing that's happened to you guys.
Yeah, it's so funny. You think about the past, we've been around, I mean, it's 25 years.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, by the grace of God. And yeah, it's such a blessing. You know, it's funny, you and I were talking before we started, there's like these moms who will come up who have children because they're moms. And the mom will be like, I grew up listening to your music. And we look at them like, that's not possible. But it's like, yeah, 25 years. Yeah. You know, she was 8 years old and now she's, you know, 33 or whatever it is. And so going back to your initial thing, when we started, it was CD and cassette. Like our first 2 albums had CDs. Or cassettes. And then our label came to us and said, hey, we're going to stop making cassettes. They're going out. And so then it was just CDs. And then Napster comes in and changes everything with streaming. And we had no clue what that meant. We didn't know I went to Belmont University, which is a great music business school. For anyone who's wanting to study the music industry, it'd be my top pick. We never studied anything about streaming. We had no clue about streaming. And so now you've gone from, you release an album about every 18 months to, I don't know, every 3 years, possibly. Now you're releasing songs basically every month, every 4 to 6 weeks. And so we have been putting out more music over the past 5 years than we have in the past 10. Like, we put out 3 albums this year. We had an album last year that won a Dove Award. We had an album the year before that won 2 Doves, and we put out another project. So yeah, it's just that thing of being consistent and still trying to make sure that you're doing what you really believe in, that things that you really feel like, hey, this could really impact the church, this could impact the world, but at the same time, being consistent and putting content out, for lack of a better word.
And you're talking about impacting the world. One of these albums was written by songwriters all across the world. My understanding is that you did that intentionally just to show what God is doing and what God is to people all across the world, and not just here in the States.
Absolutely, Jake. And I think you're going to see more and more of the church around the world speaking into music that is impacting the U.S. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because it's that God is working, the Holy Spirit is working in songwriters all over the place. And to give people some context, I'm from Detroit, as you can see, my Michigan, go blue.
Go big blue. Yes.
Go blue, baby. And it's been fun the past 2 years with Ohio State fans, because for 17 years previous, it was just painful, just painful. But I'm from Michigan, grew up in Congo, and my dad was born out there. My grandparents were missionaries out there. I grew up there from the time I was 5 to 13, so very formative years. And we would go to different villages and do evangelism. My parents have a Bible college and a radio station where they train the nationals to become pastors and evangelists. And so we've always sung songs in Kituba, which is a language I still speak, or Lingala. And so singing in different languages has always been a part of what Selah does. It's nothing new. But I had this idea of, what if we were to do songs from around the world and show how God is working in believers all over? And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's the president of Integrity Music. His name's JB, and we were doing the project with Integrity. And JB has probably been to 70 countries. And he said this profound quote that stuck with me and just kind of summarized the whole thing. And he said, I've been to so many countries, and when they worship, they will sing a Chris Tomlin song. They'll sing a Selah song. But they always sing their songs the loudest. They always sing songs birthed out of their nation with a different passion. And I know that, because I used to go to these villages and they would sing Amazing Grace and they would sing How Great Thou Art in Kituba or Lingala. But when the choirs broke out into their own songs, there was a different energy. There was a different passion. It was a charisma and genuineness. And so that resonated. So we were like, what if we could find songs from all over and then record them in English and introduce them to the English speaking world? And so the Project One name came out of that. So it's songs written in India, Indonesia, Brazil, France, Holland, and Sweden. And it is such a incredible experience to connect with the songwriters, you know, the people who wrote these songs. And we even collaborated with Gabriel Guedes, who is a gospel artist in Brazil. And he wrote a song called Glory Hallelujah, which is on the One Name Project, that we sang in English, but then we also recorded it in Portuguese because he wrote it in Portuguese. And so we did it as a duet. And so that project, it summarizes the church. It's this thing of when you can see so much evil in the world, and you can see, you know, just this progression of moving this way. And sometimes you go, man, are we all by ourselves? And it's like, no. God is working and moving in every tribe and every tongue and every nation. And so this is just a reminder of that, that he is speaking through his children in every single country.
And so we've had here in the States, we've had the invasion from Australia in our CCM, in our Christian music space. Where do you see the next wave of music coming from across the world?
Probably Brazil. You know, I mean, obviously you had the UK invasion in the 90s. You obviously with Australia has been a massive influence. It's been easier because they're all English speaking countries. So it's natural. But if you look at what's happening in Brazil, it is something very interesting is happening there, and where God is raising up musicians and leaders and songwriters and artists. And like, there's a girl named Gabriela Rocha, who's an incredible singer and songwriter. And she has a song, and I know this is going to sound like I'm just throwing out numbers, but it's just kind of to give a gauge. She has a song that she wrote that has over 500 million views on YouTube. You Raise Me Up maybe has 20 million views, maybe, you know, which is our one of our biggest songs over the years. She probably has 6 million followers on Instagram. Again, I know people might be like, why are you talking about the numbers? But you're seeing a typical gospel artist in Brazil will have like a million or 600,000 or 3 million followers. And it's not just a couple, it's a lot of them. But they're putting out music that is ministering to people, that is impacting people. And it just seems like there's a real movement that's being birthed out of Brazil that's going to reach the world. And I think it's going to impact the U.S. in a big way.
Before we move on, before we're talking, you know, before we're recording here, you were talking about the Michigan and Big Blue and the rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to mention that this extends to your household, too. Like, we can't gloss over that.
You can't. And you need to pray for me because my wife is a Buckeye. And my daughter, I have four amazing girls. And the three older ones, basically, were always Michigan because I'm all Michigan. Well, my youngest, who is a daddy's girl in every way except for football, decides, no, I'm going to go with mommy and I'm going to be a Buckeye. So, yes. So it was fun watching this last year. And Angie, my wife, she pulled on the screen. And I think something came up from an old Ohio State Michigan game where they won, because they won 17 years in a row. So it's been a lot of pain. Most of our married life, they have won. So I'm diehard. I'm like all into it. And I think she's gotten more into it because of how much I'm into it, especially when Ohio State was winning. So yeah, so we got a big game. I don't know when this will air, but Michigan plays Purdue in the Big Ten championship. Hopefully they win that. And then they go on to the national championship.
For all of us married guys, we all know that even though Michigan won, even though you guys won, you still lost. So
you do lose, man. You do lose.
Every married guy that's listening to this knows what's going on. And every married gal is like, that's right. That's right.
That's the truth. That is the truth.
With a 25-year career, that's absolutely impressive. It doesn't matter. Mainstream, Christian music, like a 25-year career in music is just absolutely astounding. So I want to hear a little bit about the history for someone who is just being introduced to you guys. I mean, there's all the award nominations and wins. There's millions of album streams and sales. And I mean, there's all that kind of stuff. But who is Selah? What's the ministry? What is the history that you guys bring behind the music?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jake. I think there's a couple things. I think if you get down to summarizing the music and who we are about comfort and encouragement and walking through pain. Probably a lot of artists do. It's probably not original to us, but are specific to us. But we get a lot of people whose family members are in cancer treatment. They're on their deathbed. They just lost a child. They got divorced. Whatever it is, I think a lot of the hymns and the lyrics behind them really connect with people. And I think one reason for that is you have a lot of hymns like Precious Lord and It Is Well With My Soul that were written out of a lot of pain and suffering. It Is Well, Horatio Spafford lost four daughters in a shipwreck. He wasn't on that ship, but when he got to the area where the accident happened, he was out on the deck and he said he felt this peace and just the words came to him, when sorrows like sea billows roll, even so it is well with my soul. And so I think people, whether they realize it or not, it's almost like, you know how the scriptures say that even when you don't know what to pray, the Spirit intercedes for you. And I think in some ways, God uses music to intercede or where he uses that, where he can minister into your heart, into your soul, even when you don't know how to pray or what you need. It's almost like the Holy Spirit is able to connect and minister to you, whether it's using music or a sermon or whatever. It's something where there's an immediate connection. I think people can sense that there was pain in that song, even if they don't know the story of it. Precious Lord, Take My Hand. Was written by Thomas Dorsey after he lost his wife and baby during the pregnancy. And he was out doing evangelism, got a telegram, and supposedly he said, God, you're of no use to me. I have no need for you. And went back home, went and sat at the piano at the funeral and wrote the song, Precious Lord, Take My Hand, Lead Me On. Help me stand. I'm tired and I'm weary and I'm worn. I think sometimes we can see the hymns as these super religious, you know, old English type words, but man, when they wrote them in the day, they were writing about their pain and their suffering and Lord, please give me the strength to get through one more day. So I think as far as a mission, I think a big purpose for us is to bring that God would bring, use our music as healing, as a balm, as a way to encourage, as a way to remind people of the truth of the gospel and of the Bible. And I think too, we do a lot of hymns and a lot of people don't do hymns anymore. And so and I don't mean this like, look at the cross we're carrying, but I think as far as one of our missions over these past 25 years is to reintroduce the hymns to younger generations. And we have a lot of parents who come up to us and say, my church doesn't sing hymns anymore. And so we listen, my kids have learned the hymns through your records. So I think as far as a missional purpose, those are some of the things. As far as how we started, we had no intention of being a group. I met Alan at Belmont University, which is, I think I'm already mentioned that, but it's this great music school, music business, musical theater, you name it. And so I studied more of the business side of things, and he was a classical pianist and they have studios there. And so we met in the studio, and then he asked if I would just come and sing in one of the piano rooms because he was stressed out about exams. And that's when I found out he could play. I had no idea because I only knew him as a singer. When we went there, Brad Paisley was there.
Wait, so Brad Paisley went to Belmont?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a trivia fact that, well, man.
Oh, yeah. He was a classmate. We used to go and do events together. There was a friend of mine. She was going back to Kentucky. And Hazard, Kentucky is actually what it's called. And like the Dukes of Hazard. And she put on a show in college. And so Brad was the guitarist. I was a background singer. And I don't know Brad super well, but he's super funny. And pranks like you wouldn't believe. And just an unbelievable guitarist. Like I remember the first time he kind of made his debut at Belmont, we would have these showcases. So like I sing in the rock showcase and the gospel showcase, but there was a female artist, a student who made the country showcase. And she was the closing. There'd be like four groups and she would be she was the closer. Well, Brad was playing guitar for her and all of us were super excited to hear her, but he stole the show without even trying to. Everybody was like, who is that guitarist? I think the next year he did the songwriter showcase. And so there's a song, it was one of his first big hits called, it's about fishing. And it's basically choosing between my girl and fishing. And so in the chorus, it goes, so I'm going to miss her.
Yeah, I remember that.
So he used to sing that, but it was a different version. It was actually more funny. The version he used to sing at school, I guess his publisher made him change some of the words or something like that when they released the final version. But yeah, he was there. Dan Needham, who plays for Michael W. Smith. And if you look at any record, Dan's probably the studio drummer on it. Mm-hmm. Dan Muckola, who's a keyboardist and producer. Bernie Herms, who's written everything that Casting Crowns has ever done and is married to Natalie. Mike Jay, who's a manager of Casting Crowns. All these guys, we were all students together. We ate all the same horrible food and took all the tests. And so Alan, we would sing in the piano rooms. Then he asked if I'd help lead worship at church. And I can't read music, so I just did the L kind of thing. And the pastor was like, hey, would you put on a concert? I'm about to be, he was being confirmed basically as the head pastor. He was an interim pastor. We did this concert like a month later, didn't have time to write stuff. So I asked my sister, because I didn't want to sing alone. I was like, hey, will you sing with us? And we just picked hymns and songs that we grew up singing in Africa and other worship songs. And that led to that concert, which led to another one, which led to a youth event. And at this youth event, my mom came to it, and I remember driving up to it and going, why did we agree to sing hymns for teenagers? Like, this is going to be awful. And it ended up being this amazing night. And the kids were just so connected. And at one point they were like, they made us sing His Eyes on the Sparrow again, which who would have thought that, but we sang that. And then later the 16-year-old comes up to Alan and he's like, did you guys write that? And Alan was like, no, man, it's in this hymnal book. And there's so many great songs. And my mom said, you guys really need to make an album of this stuff. And I was like, well, mom, we don't have this thing called money. And so she said, I'll take care of it. And Alan, one of his college roommates was an engineer and was just starting to use this new thing called Pro Tools, which was brand new in Nashville. Jason, who's been our producer ever since, we recorded it in 2 weeks. And Nicole, my sister, was signed to Curb Records, and she had to turn the project into them. And Mike heard it and called her the next day and said, hey, I want you to do your pop thing, but there's something here with your brother and with Alan. I want you to do that. So we had no idea. Like we weren't, and I was moving back to Detroit to go to Bible college after I finished at Belmont. Alan was going to be in country music and do session work. Nicole was going to do pop music. And it was, you know, my mom and it was Mike. And then it was like, okay, well, I guess this is the next step. You know, he offered us a record deal. And so it took us about a year to sign that, negotiate. And then finally it took 2 years to release it, even though we'd finished it in 97. So yeah, that's how we got started.
Well, I guess that's a good segue to one of the other projects that came out this year was The Greatest Hymns Volume 3.
Yeah.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
I grew up on just the edge of the hymns. The small churches that I grew up in were still hymns. And it's just fascinating to see my oldest is 11, just watching her just be introduced to the hymns, you know, right alongside the rest of everything else that's going on in CCM these days. And and it's exciting for me to see her be just as enthused about the hymns.
And that's really cool.
I love what's happening around the hymns in the industry. Like when Maverick City, Chandler Moore did his hymn mashup. I think it was like a year or two ago on one of their albums. Just absolutely all 20 minutes just wrecked me. But like you said, there's just so much theology. There's so much musicality in those hymns that I don't necessarily want to say it's being lost, and it's not being lost intentionally. But, you know, as the industry moves, just like any industry, like, I mean, 80s music, you don't hear a lot of 80s music. You know, it's just one of those things that just hasn't moved along right alongside everything else.
Yeah.
But there's just so great to hear those, you know, come back, just the theology. It's almost like a time capsule into a previous generation.
Totally. And I think what you said, as far as the lyrics go, next to scripture, I don't think there's anything stronger than the hymns, the theology and the way that they wrote. There's such beauty in the lyrics. And it's, you know, we learn things through visual and audio, you know, so you think about a pastor might preach and I'll maybe retain 3% of it. But if you sing a song and I hear it a couple of times, I'll remember it the rest of my life. You know, even if I have dementia, like so many people who I've heard who they're in assisted living and families go to visit them and they don't know who their son is or who their daughter is, but they start singing a hymn and that parent sings every word of that. You know, it's like stored in their mind. It's like that one gift from God to still be there. And so music is so powerful. So for us to write truth, to make sure that it's truth, and it could be a love song. Just write a love song that's true, you know, and it's so powerful because we internalize it. And just like we do with video, you know, I think that's probably, you know, on Instagram or TikTok, why Reels and those videos have taken off so much, or YouTube. If I have to build something in my house, the first thing I do is I go to YouTube, because visually I can see what they're doing. I learn much better that way. So with the music and with these hymns and the theology, that's such a great way to raise our kids up to internalize what scripture is actually saying.
You're talking about the hospital and the dementia. I mean, just connecting with grandparents, or you just kind of bridging those generation gaps. A couple of years ago, we went to say goodbye to my grandpa. And one of the very last things that we did was I brought my guitar up with me on the trip. We drove and he got to go home for his last night. And we just sat around and just sang hymns and just watching him. He wasn't very conscious. He wasn't quite all there, but just one of the last things that he did was sing hymns and praise. And that's how he went home. And just the power of that memory, just connecting with that, just watching him sing those songs that he's known, that he grew up with, was just a very, very powerful moment for all of us in the room.
Wow.
I mean, just a memory that we'll have, you know, that's our last memory of grandpa is singing hymns.
That's beautiful, man. That is beautiful, Jake. Wow.
I mean, you just can't beat memories like that. Like something I've never done before. Like, I'm not the guy that brings a guitar everywhere around the campfire, you know, anything like that, but you know, just that connection and just that memory, you know, my daughter's going to remember that memory.
Well, and what a great way to remember your grandpa. It's not the guy with dementia who couldn't remember everything. It is, we had this moment where we worshiped together and we sang together and we sang hymns. Like, that is so beautiful.
Yeah. And what better way to go home than singing?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Wow. How long ago was that?
That was right at the start of the pandemic, actually.
And how long did he have dementia?
Well, it wasn't dementia. He was going through cancer. So he was, when I say he was kind of out of it, it was more like he was definitely on the way going home. Like, he was just going into like hospice. He was just,
yes.
It's kind of like those, that last kind of day. And so we had to go home early. So like that was kind of how we spent our last night there, you know, our family. And as we're driving home the next day, we got word that he had gone home. And when he went to sleep that night, like, he just, everybody kind of cleared out after we're singing around, and you know, he just kind of went down for the, you know, going to sleep for the night and all that. And like I said, we got the call the next morning that, you know, he had gone home. And so that was kind of like that last thing that he did, just what little energy he had left was going into singing the hymns that he grew up singing.
Wow, man, what a story.
Wow. I didn't know that was going to, one of the few breakup emotional moments on the podcast here for me, but.
Yeah, man. Thanks for sharing that story about your grandpa. You know, it's interesting when you said that, I started thinking about, there's a friend of mine who's a missionary who wrote a book called The Insanity of God, and it's on believers in persecution. And so I actually, they made it into a documentary and we released it in theaters. I wrote music for it. In the book, the missionary who wrote it lost a son to asthma in Kenya. And they used to listen to our music when they were on the field, but then even after, so It Is Well in particular really impacted them. And he started talking in the book about heart songs and how everybody has a heart song, no matter what, everyone does. And so he said, we found that people who were prisoners in Russia always had a song they would go to, that they would sing when they were just feeling like they couldn't make it. And believers who had their houses taken from them, or whoever, you know, there was always a song or two that they would go to. And so, like, there was this one Russian pastor who was in prison for 17 years for starting a church. And every morning he'd wake up and he would raise his hands and he would sing this song of praise to God. And when he sang it, the other prisoners would spit at him. They'd cuss at him. They'd throw feces at him. Well, 17 years later, he's being dragged to his execution, and all those same prisoners stand up and raise their hands, and they start singing this old Russian hymn that he would sing every day.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God, give me strength. And the guards were so terrified that they looked at him and they were like, who are you? And he said, my name is Dimitri, and I'm a son of the living God, and his name is Jesus. And they put him back in his jail cell, and eventually he was released, and eventually his son became the pastor of that, first pastor of that prison. But also in the book, Nick, who's the writer, Nick Ripken, he wrote about a friend of his who, back in the States, and he was just talking about the power of music, and he said his friend's dad was in assisted living, had dementia, had no idea who he was or who his wife was or who his son's wife was, you know, and or the grandkids. And so they would go every once in a while to visit, and he just dreaded going to it because it's like, I don't know who this person is anymore, and this person doesn't know any of us. And they were, you know, sitting around trying to connect and trying to communicate. Nothing would happen. And everybody went to the cafeteria. He told Nick, I was just so angry and so broken. And I just went to the back wall and was kind of pounding on it. And he starts singing a hymn. And all of a sudden he hears this voice sing with him. And he sings again, and the voice sings some more. And he turns around, and his dad is singing. He starts singing with him, and his dad starts singing right with him. And he ran out and got everybody in the cafeteria, and they sat around this bed. And he said, for 2 hours, my dad didn't know who we were, but he sang every word of these songs, and we got to worship together. So when you were sharing, you know, that story, that just made me think about that, and just the gift that music is, that God has given to us to connect and to encourage and to have memories like that, for that to be your memory of him. What a beautiful gift to go on with the rest of your life and for your daughter. So
kind of circling back to this hymn album and the hymn that you've done with all these albums, what are some of the most powerful hymns that you guys have recorded and that have just really landed and resonated with the younger generation?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. I think some of the top songs that have connected with younger generations, they would be It Is Well With My Soul, A Wonderful Merciful Savior, which is more of a modern day hymn, but it's, I would still put it as a hymn. His Eyes on the Sparrow, ones that are off this new project, and we're still trying them, but we actually went on Facebook and Instagram and said, hey, what songs would you all want to hear? And we got over 1,000 selections for Greatest Hymns 3. Here's the wow. Shameless plug. From that, they helped us narrow it down to 50, and then we chose 13 songs because, you know, sometimes you'll go into the studio and one song, it seems like it'll be great, and then you start to record it and it's like, it's not there yet. So let me see. This Is My Father's World. We recorded an old classic from the 1970s called Put Your Hand in the Hand that Ann Murray and Elvis and a group called Ocean did. It's so funny. Like even last night, I was like, hey, do you guys know this song? And I start singing, put your hand in the hand of the man who stilled the water. The whole audience starts singing it. It's crazy. And they were singing through the whole thing, you know, and then we started doing it, singing the rest of the song. So that's one to, let me see, The Love of God. Love of God, I think, is one. The third verse is one of the most beautiful lyrics ever written. And basically, it's just describing that his love is so deep. If the oceans were ink, we wouldn't have enough ink to write down every description of his love. And there wouldn't be enough paper. There aren't enough trees to write it down. And so if anyone has the chance, Google The Love of God, especially the third verse. And according to tradition, that was written by a Jewish man in a who had gone crazy. He was in an asylum. And he wrote that verse on the walls of his cell. So, yeah, those would definitely be some of the most powerful ones from Greatest Hymns 3.
Well, we've got to talk about Christmas because this third album, Wait for the Shameless Plug, Wait for the Shameless Plug.
There we go.
There it is.
There it is.
So it's Christmas time. We have this Christmas album. I would be hurt if we didn't start off talking about your feud with, I haven't heard his name pronounced, but John Acuff.
John Acuff.
There's an ongoing feud with John here that we've got to hear about.
Yeah, so John Acuff is a New York Times bestselling author, and he's written a bunch of books, and he's a speaker. He's one of our dearest friends. He and Jenny, they're literally our neighbors. Like, I can see their house right now from my house. And we've lived in our neighborhood 12 years. I think they moved in 11 years ago. And so one of the great things about our neighborhood is there's a community pool, you know, so in the summertime you really do get to know your neighbors, and some of our best friends are our neighbors, and they're two of them. And so about 4 years ago, Jenny bought a massive 20-foot Santa, this red Santa. If you go on my Instagram, it's just at official Todd Smith. And it's funny, I just posted a little 2-minute video just giving them a hard time that's gone viral. It's because they have 5 Santa Clauses out there. Oh, there's 3 20-foot and then like a 14 and a 12, and I don't have anything out there. But basically what happened was they started off with the 1, and so I just bought a little 3-foot Santa that faced off against him. And so we have this thing when we're at the pool called Sunset Wars that he and my wife, Angie, always got into of who could take the best picture of the sunset, because the sunsets by the pool are just beautiful. So I started posting about my little Santa with their big one and started calling it Santa Wars. And so then the next year we bought an 18-foot Frosty the Snowman. And so totally surprised them and destroyed them. So they won the first year. We won the second year. Well, then last year they bought 2 Santas. And then this year they've got 5.
Oh, no.
And so they don't know what I have in store yet. But I have some stuff in store. So people will have to go on my Instagram. But yes, that is how that tradition started. And we'll continue. I bet in 10 years, like, we're going to have big Frosties on our house, and they're going to have big Santas on their houses, and yeah, it's going to be nuts.
So one of you guys is going to have like a real life snow globe before this is all done, like just encompassing your house and like the fake snow. And
I'm going to hire a real Frosty. I'm going to find him somewhere, you know, go find him in the Himalayas and bring him back here. So
as we're recording this, I think it was a story, but John was saying how he was going in the comments and poking at some of the people who are talking about it being excessive. Like he's just sitting there instigating, just kind of feeding the fire.
Totally. Well, it was funny because you'll do a post there's certain times you'll try to do a post and go, this one's going to go nuts. Nobody watches it whatsoever. Yep. Then there's something you just, you know, do matter of factly and it explodes. And there's a point where a post, it's not yours anymore. It's like, it becomes part of this banter kind of thing. And my tone sounds like I'm the old angry neighbor who's really ticked off at the ACUS for like, look at these people, look at what they're doing kind of thing. So then there's comments where it's like, what a waste of money. What a waste of this. How could you guys be so like excessive and this and that? So John, he like loves that stuff. So yeah, I sent him a message. I was like, dude, I think people think I'm really ticked at you. So he was like, that's hilarious. So then he started going on in the comments and responding back to people. And he's so quick witted that it's really funny. So.
I'm not going to say that that's the reason for the season, but that's a good outcome of the season.
Hey, if you're having a hard Christmas, you know, if you're like, I'm going to have to visit with weirdo Uncle Andrew on the 24th and 25th, and I'm dreading it, then just tune in to mine and John's Instagram for Santa Wars, and it'll put a smile on your face.
Yes. Or listen to the new Selah Christmas album.
That's right.
Because I think that's where we're going with that.
That's a shameless plug. Here's the Selah Christmas at This Table album. So
tell us a little bit about the album and your favorite songs that got put into the album here.
Yeah. So Amy lives in Texas. Al and I live in Nashville. And she just started doing foster care this year. So she told us, I can't be super busy. So we came back and said, hey, we understand. Let's make 3 albums. She was like, are you nuts? Especially with the last two. She was like, you guys pick the songs. I'm not going to have time. Work out the arrangements and I'll just fly up and record. So we did that with the Hymns Project, but primarily people chose those and then we narrowed them down. Then it came to the Christmas one and we made a list of 10 songs and then told her, hey, we're going to need you to come up next week. We're going to start tracking. She's like, oh, wait, you have the whole list? Wait, I've got this one song I want to do. And we're like, okay, what is it? And it was At This Table, which Idina Menzel, she sings it. And she was in Wicked, and she's in, I think there's a Disney movie that she's in that just came out recently.
Very unknown movie, something like Frozen or...
Yeah, I forget. Well, yeah, sorry. She's in Frozen too. I didn't mean that. There's one that just came out like 2 days ago.
I thought you were leading up to something there. Sorry. My bad.
There's this one, you may have heard of it. That's hilarious. Yeah. She was obviously, people have seen Frozen. She's in Frozen. She writes this song At This Table and Amy was listening to it. She was in a Starbucks and she just started crying. She was like, that lyric and the whole idea of everyone being welcome at the table, because Thanksgiving and Christmas can be incredible times for people when they're getting together. It can also be really painful if you've lost a loved one and now you've got to face a holiday with that empty chair, but it can also be really awkward and painful when you don't get along with family members. And I think we all have that to some degree, you know, with certain family members, or as you know, you've grown up different, you might have different political views or whatever it is. And then you come back together and it's like, you know, nails on a chalkboard kind of thing. And so, you could have a father who hasn't talked to his son in, you know, 10 years because of some argument. And what would it take to just for that dad to call that son up and say, hey, I just want you to know I love you. And can you just come for Thanksgiving? Can you just come for Christmas? And let's just be with the family. There aren't going to be any expectations, but I just want you to know you're welcome and we want you here. And the idea isn't, you know, just you can be whatever you want and that's okay. The idea is you can come to the table. The table is a place that is where you are welcome. In the same way that when Jesus takes Matthew and he says, hey, tax collector, come be a part of my 12. He doesn't say, hey, get your life right and get this right and do this and do that and then come to the table. He brings him along and then he brings, I think it was James the Zealot, which means they're on opposite sides. And he brings them both in knowing that their lives are going to be transformed. And I realize that we're not Jesus and there could be situations where it's unhealthy for you to be with a relative. So I'm not trying to say, hey, just suck it up, you know, for that kind of thing. But there can be a lot of times where we will hold off because of bitterness or pride instead of just going, hey, Let's just be together. I mean, when I think about for myself and, you know, areas where I screwed up or this or that, if I was able to just come in and be in the presence of God or be in the presence of whoever I hurt and make things right, but also have their forgiveness, it's like one of the most powerful things. And so this song is just that. We thought it was just so perfect for this time period of, man, what if you could put your politics to the side, or maybe, you know, you rightfully so, you have anger or hurt or whatever, but, you know, we're called to forgive and we're called to love each other. And so is there a way to bring that all together and have a time where you're with each other and you're loving each other, even as you're working through things? So that's a long introduction to At This Table. Let me see. Some of my favorites that we did. Oh, Come All You Faithful. And we just sang that. We just started our Christmas tour. And so by the time this airs, we'll still have some Christmas tours dates. So people can go on selahonline.com/tour and they can see where we're going to be. But we just sang, Oh, Come All You Faithful, We Adore Him. And the We Adore Him part's a new part that I wrote onto the song. And so that was fun to sing that last night. We did an African version of Joy to the World, which wow. was a lot of fun to do. Let me see. We combined Amen and Go Tell It on the Mountain, which was really fun, you know, because you have this old, probably both old spirituals, you know, and so just to connect those two in a way that worked was a lot of fun to do.
That's incredible. And man, you were talking about just not being busy and your sister not wanting to do much more, but you guys are on the road to cap all of this off, like this whole rest thing. I don't know. Maybe we can propose a name change for you guys here. Like, what's the opposite of Selah?
Yeah, right. Let me see. What's that drink? The Red Bull. Maybe there's a Selah Bowl or something like that. Because yeah, it's been intense. So been intense.
Well, just really appreciate you taking a few minutes here, and I hope the rest of the season you guys do get to rest a little bit. And like I said, just appreciate you taking the time here, Todd.
Man, thanks so much, Jake.